Scott made an offer for John Dean to go to the grand jury. And you said check with Dean and see if he has any problems if we do that. Called Dean and he said there would be no problem. Then he wanted to tell me about some of the things he's been working and brought me up today. He just talked with Jeff McGruder about the meeting plan business and all that. Then he obviously got into his notes that he was working on reconstructing the situation, because he says the main problem area that we're faced with is the blackmail situation. I was aware, this is Dean talking, I was aware that Mitchell and others were being blackmailed by those involved, and I sought to ignore it, so I am vague on the specifics. First time I was aware of it was when Mitchell told me the defendants wanted help regarding money for Mom. But this was relayed from Mrs. Hunt to Bittman to Parkinson to Mitchell and LaRue. And they, the defendants, were threatening to cause general havoc if they were not helped. Parkinson said he did not want to be involved further in this, so Bittman used O'Brien. O'Brien is unhappy with his role in this too. O'Brien reported the threats to Mitchell and LaRue and Dean, and Dean passed on some of them to some people in the White House. After Mitchell had the original threat, he told Dean to tell Holden and Erwin that we needed to use Kalmbach to raise money, and he should get Holden and Erwin to authorize this. Kalmbach raised the money and delivered it per instructions to LaRue, about $70,000. The next time there was a threat to the committee, there was no money available. Stantz and LaRue were aware of the $350,000 for the White House for Poland. The White House had not spent this money and wanted to return. Only Strachan, with Holden's approval, could spend the money. There was one problem, about $22,000 that had already been spent, and I don't know the purpose. The problem was how to return the funds without a big deal in the press, so the funds just sat in Strachan's safe. Mitchell asked Dean to ask Holden for some of this money and assured that it could be replenished. Dean told Holden and said there's a bad situation here, growing worse. LaRue or O'Brien said it was a crisis. Holden said to have Strachan get the money, but to clear it as soon as possible. Holden said to get all of the money out of here and get a receipt for it. Strachan did get the money out, but got no receipt. I'm not aware of the extent of the threats to the committee. Those were two examples. He's not aware of how far the threats to the committee went, but there were two blackmail threats to the White House. One, Mrs. Hunt, to Colson's secretary, made a veiled threat, and Colson didn't know what it was about and referred to Dean. Dean advised Colson to take no more calls from Mrs. Hunt and reported the incident to O'Brien. The second was when O'Brien told Dean that Hunt insisted on meeting, and then he sent a message to Dean regarding a need for 72 plus 50, and that if it was not received, he would reconsider his options and disclose the CD things he did for Erwin and Crow. Dean advised Haldeman and Erwin of this threat. Erwin requested that Dean discuss this with Mitchell and Colson. Dean discussed it with Mitchell, but not Colson. Mitchell said in a later meeting there was no problem. He said Dean's notes. Not in a position to fully evaluate the situation on blackmail, but all concerned made the point of dire threats to the White House, but when people are being blackmailed, they imagine the worst. That's all it is on blackmail. He says, regarding clemency, O'Brien told Dean that Bittman was asked by Hunt to meet with Colson. Erwin said Colson should meet with Bittman, and he did. Colson said it was essential that Hunt be given assurance.
Colson to him.
And Erwin agreed. Colson told Bittman that he could make no commitment, but as a friend, he would assist. He referred to Christmas as the time when clemency action is usually taken, and Hunt was satisfied with this.
One thing that does is that's a tie in the United States, trying to say it's early.
Hunt was obviously very disloyal, extremely disloyal.
Colson did discuss it, but it was, I must say, that conversation I'm not afraid of, because anybody would have a right to say, he didn't say, I have to do this or that or the other thing. He simply said, I'm not in a hell of a shape.
Well, Colson has every intention of, and it's to his overriding interest to do so, to say that any conversation he ever has with the president on any subject, he will not discuss with anyone. He'll say that on a consistent basis, so if it isn't in relation to this or anything else, it's
You should also, I think you have to go further. I could say this, I could only say that this is a subject you would never bring up. I won't discuss any conversation, but I can assure you, you don't listen to the subject, you would never bring up the president.
Agreed. Because the Chuck was in a bad frame of mind for a hundred percent certain at this time.
The president himself.
So he had his wife and little kid over. The whole thing. And Colson was making the case for his going and talking to Hunt or seeing Hunt. And he really had on his mind that he might do that.
Let's look at Hunt now. Hunt now realizes no clemency's hanging out there. He sure knows that, isn't he? Must think of that.
Why?
At this time, who else can take care of, for example, nobody there to take care of Hunt's kids and daughters?
Well, he doesn't need it now. That's it. See, he got an awful lot of money. His wife was fully insured. I did not have the same.
Maybe not. Problem. What about Bittman?
What do you think? Well, Bittman's in criminal jeopardy. He's on the same thing. Colson made the proposition.
Get Bittman in the
hospital. Yeah, I would guess so. I would
go to Bittman and say that Colson said he had talked to the president. The president had promised us that that would have
been. It occurs to me that he's well prepared to handle it.
I think you have a strong witness there.
I knew that I had with the expectation that, in the course of the development of the prosecution of this case, a firm body of facts will become available to me upon which I can make a decision. That's the end of that. It'll be a generalized, kind of thing. We made a list this morning to try and see who were in the same boat as I am personally in this.
Right.
That is, not charged with anything. With no evidence before the grand jury yet.
Yeah.
With an incipient problem. And there are 17 of us in the same identical situation.
Yeah. That's principles.
Commission, not looking at secretaries or
right.
Like who?
You put me in the second category.
Yeah,
but we're trying to get take me in your category,
right?
Rudy is conceivably in that category, although I really don't think so. I put it down first, but I think I
doubt that. But
Dick Moore, yeah. Is either in mine or yours, I don't know which. Dick Howard, who used to work for Postman, is still there. Clearly in that. Paul Moore, who works in Rudy's office, is clearly in that. Bruce Curly is a remote possibility in the sense that he was there broken and safe. I think that's the only possibility.
Right.
John Dean is in the first category. Fred Fielding would be in your category. And everybody in Dean's office is going to be right. Irvin is in that category. Noel Cook is in that category. He's involved with Colson. Bill Timmons is in that category, and Wally Johnson.
How did they evolve?
Timmons was alleged at one point to have received the bugging output, and I think does have some involvement in the convention problems which this focused around at that time. And Wally Johnson was very much involved in, and so was Timmons, in the meetings that went on that could be considered by the cover-up.
Meetings without watching
How to deal with the Watergate problem
at
various points in time.
Right.
And Water, Timmons, I would say, was more direct. Then you got the whole problem with the press office. Ziegler, who is publicly accused of lying,
and who has had a lot of private transactions with Dean through this whole time. With Dean and me in an effort to get Ziegler positioned, and is probably chargeable by Dean with notice of some of the things that I've turned.
Jerry Warren falls under the same problem as the
life, for example, with Ziegler.
Well,
I've got in the calendar half a dozen meetings of Dean, Ehrlichman, and Ziegler. It would be the kind of situation where the McCord letter was about to come out. And Dean would have inside information as to what it was. And so we would sit down and talk about the press handling of this. But the Segretti matter, Segretti had all kinds of inside information on the Segretti matter, which Dean got,
right?
His investigation,
right?
Those papers.
Jerry Warren sort of falls in the same thing. And Ken Clausen, both in that area and in the Colson area during the campaign, but he was, I'm sure he was heavily involved in the Colson-type activities, as was Bill Radovan, I think, who was in the Colson office, not in the Ziegler office.
We're now including not only Watergate, but
including
Segretti.
No, this isn't Segretti-type stuff. This is
all Watergate.
It's not Watergate either.
Bringing the Cubans us to rough up the
streets.
Yeah.
Campaign
activity.
Right.
There.
Right.
Irvin Committee.
Irvin Committee at least, but it's coming out now, so it's going to be pressed before Irvin Committee.
My
and probably will get, in some way, locked into the grand jury business because of the money.
Yeah, for instance, Dick Howard gets involved in the money. Okay. Now, if the premise is that someone is going to be a problem to the functioning of the presidency,
right?
Then you've got there isn't any good place to stop without going all the way, because if we're off the people to take up farming in Iowa.
Right.
And Bill Rattigan someday becomes just as big a problem to you as I might be if I were here, because they haven't got me to focus on it.
Because they can't tell you, he never becomes a big problem because they can't tie Rattigan to the president.
Well, Bill Timmons. I think rather than to be specific about an individual or individuals, you really have to carve out for yourself a kind of a generic classification and decide what you're going to do about those people. And you do one of two things. You could say, I've checked this and it now goes down 18 deep. And so they're all gone tomorrow morning. Or you can say there are shades and gradations on this thing and the judicial process is underway, and I'm going to let the remedy fit the crime, so to speak.
Then what you'd have to do, though, is as soon as, if they lob out Timmons, then he goes to the EULA arrest. If you lob out here somewhere, you go. If you lob out APZ, go. It'd simply be witnesses. I don't think very many of them will probably be targets. But in the press, a witness is a target.
True.
You come down to there.
Well, I come down to treating Dean differently than Bob, Bob differently than me. And that's a self-serving kind of a suggestion, but it keeps coming back to me that this hyphenated treatment of Haldeman and Ehrlichman does not really take into account the different press posture in which we find ourselves.
I agree with that.
I stand at the moment with all kinds of press calling in my office saying, geez, why does he even have a lawyer?
Yeah.
And
the problem with you having the same lawyer, I guess.
That's a problem, and then we're past that, or we've taken the gas on that,
yeah.
And so on, and then eventually we probably have to make other arrangements, but if that was a mistake, it's a mistake. But as far as the perception of the press, of my situation now, they don't know, really, that Dean has anything. And as a matter of fact, that apparently the leaks out of the prosecutor's office had downplayed my involvement. Now maybe that's to lull me or to trap me or something, but
we'll all have to check on Peterson.
That's right. And you would have to be satisfied on that. I'm stuck with this dilemma. If Bob and I both take a leave, Tuesday morning, I've got to start answering questions.
Right.
What do I say? Well, you see, there's this fella, and he says this and this about me, and it isn't true. But
let me ask you this, then. If you're not suggesting, just nobody take the lead, then.
No, I don't. I suggest you fire Dean, and then Bob take the lead. And that I be prepared, to take the lead,
you
then the charge is surfaced.
Why do you have Bob take the lead? Because of his...
Because he's already pretty well beaten up.
Name
him. He's not the funds and so on and so forth.
Yeah. And in your case,
the interest hasn't come out.
That's true.
Now,
we've got no basis for
I know,
but John, we've got no basis for taking any action.
Correct.
For taking the lead, correct.
No apparent basis. That doesn't gain me a whole lot, except that it divides me PR-wise. And to me, that's some little advantage. To be divided from Dean, clearly.
Yeah.
And it could be divided a little bit from Bob in the sense that I don't share this 350 transaction with him. And therefore...
Also, you don't share the 350 transaction. If you do, you also don't share any question about did you see any of the tape.
That's correct.
Which, of course, that's right.
That's correct.
The charges, potential charges against us are different.
But that,
on the other hand,
the
service team is
be terribly happy with it. I wouldn't be terribly happy with it. But I would be in a kind of an important start situation at that point.
Yeah.
with all the right motives and maybe mostly the right acts, but it compounded itself.
Six
no way they're going to get it. You've got Henry's view. We've got to come through the process most of the board is the president from there. And the confidence of the Congress, the confidence of the country, et cetera, et cetera. We've also got to hand over to Sicilian family.
I don't believe I ever did.